McKinnon stationed to the right of Mahomes. Ball was snapped on the near hash. Chiefs load up three to the left side. Mahomes crossing pattern caught. Kelce, 10-yard line, 5-yard line, touchdown! Kansas City! Will Kelce do it to the Chargers again on a crossing pattern? And now Travis Kelce. Chiefs still playing press on the receivers with two deep safeties. Herbert's in trouble again. He will unload it down the middle. It's going to be deflected and intercepted! Intercepted at the 42-yard line! Yes, Nick Bolton! Why not, Nick Bolton? He's playing at an all-pro level, and the Kansas City Chiefs are going to do it again to the Chargers in this stadium.
And the Chiefs indeed do what John Elway and the Broncos did to the Chiefs over and over and over. Braden Turner is a big Chiefs fan, and he put out there last night, I just can't imagine what Bronco fans, Charger fans, and Raider fans are going through right now. It has to be insufferable. And I responded, you must be too young to remember the John Elway days in Denver. I said, it is insufferable. You can't wait for Elway to either get hurt or retire or get traded. And you always, I remember those days. I don't like to remember them. I don't know how many times the Chiefs would outplay the Broncos for 3.5 quarters. And yet I knew exactly what was going to happen. Elway was going to rip our heart out. He was going to break our hearts, and he was going to find a way to rally and beat the Chiefs. And every once in a while, the Chiefs would beat Elway and the Broncos. But more often than not, the Broncos and Elway would find a way to beat the Chiefs. And it was always, man, it'd really be nice to have that guy. Yep. That franchise quarterback, that guy that would take you to Super Bowls and win Super Bowls like John Elway did. And guess what? Now we, Chiefs Kingdom, have that guy. So for young people out there, I know you don't remember what happened before you were born, but yes, it is insufferable, and you better enjoy this to the fullest, because there will be a time you will eventually get to suffer through what we suffered through back in the Elway days as Chiefs fans. Because when Mahomes retires, or career-ending injury, or something like that, Kelce the same way, then you will, yes, you will go through some quarterback that might not be any good. Chiefs draft a guy that's a complete bust, or they try to get a San Francisco retread quarterback, as they did for about 20 years. Montana worked out okay for a short period of time. But I was just laughing when I saw that comment. It must be insufferable. It is. I've been through it. I've lived it. And now it's awesome to be on the other side of this. I mean, last night I'm watching the Chiefs-Charger game, and I was never concerned for 1 second. Not 1 second was I concerned. When the Chargers went down, they got the 3rd and 18. In past years, before Mahomes came to the Chiefs, I would have been screaming and probably throwing my remote through my television because they give up a 40-yard pass on 3rd and 18. Instead, I was like, it just creates more drama, and it just sets it up for Mahomes to add to his legacy. That's it. That's what I thought. I wasn't concerned at all. In fact, I'm sitting here and I'm like, the Chargers can't milk the clock out. They can't do what the Bengals did in Cincinnati, because the Bengals just needed a field goal, so they could do that last year. The Chargers, they just settle for a field goal. We go to overtime. You don't want to lose a coin toss, let Mahomes have the ball first. So the Chargers had to score when they could score. And when they did, I'm like, dear Lord, this is way too much time. And my oldest said, yeah, but we're missing a lot of weapons. I said, this will add to Mahomes' legacy. He says, who cares? It's not a playoff game. I said, then why do we play the regular season games if it doesn't matter? Of course it does. I said, you know, Aaron Rodgers has no receivers. He loses Devontae Adams. Aaron Rodgers' team goes 4-7. Tom Brady loses. Rob Gronkowski retires. And Brady, you know, gets some yards, but the team is like 3-5 to start the year. All right? We can go through all the examples of quarterbacks that lose their top one receiver, and they're toast. I mean, some of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, they lose somebody, they're in deep, deep doo-doo, okay? Mahomes didn't just lose Tyreek Hill during the offseason. He lost Juju last night. He didn't have him. He didn't have Mecole Hardman. And then Kadarius Toney hurt his hamstring, and he was out. The Chiefs last night won with Justin Watson, Jody Fortson, Noah Gray, Sky Moore came up huge, and yes, you do have one go-to guy in Travis Kelce. It just adds to the Mahomes legacy. And ladies and gentlemen, you need to sit back and really enjoy what you are watching. Because as I put on Twitter last night, this is not normal. This is not normal. 25 straight wins in November and December for the Chiefs. That is insane. That is not normal. It's not normal for a quarterback in year 5 as a starter to have never lost a divisional road game, ever. He's 14-0, and he's played against some really good quarterbacks and some really good teams in this division, in particular the Chargers. And the Chargers are the ones that are now the Chiefs fans back when Elway was doing his thing. The Chargers are now the Chiefs of the 80s against Elway, all right, in early 90s. And the Chiefs are now the Broncos who had Elway. I mean, it is insane. Mahomes' winning percentage going in the fourth quarter when his team behind is 60%. 60. Let me put that in perspective. Six out of every 10 times the Chiefs are down going into the fourth quarter, they still win. Dude, most quarterbacks would take 60% winning percentage overall, period, no matter what the situation is.
If you draft a quarterback and say he's going to win 60% of your games, you take it.
You would take the quarterback in a heartbeat. Okay, the next best winning percentage when trailing going in the fourth quarter is Jay Schrader, who used to quarterback the Redskins, and his winning percentage, 38%. So Mahomes is 60%. And the next closest guy in the history of the NFL trailing going the fourth quarter in win percentage is Jay Schrader at 37.5%. Mahomes is 22.5% better than any quarterback in NFL history trailing going the fourth quarter. Now you may say, well, they must not be that good. They're trailing going the fourth quarter. First of all, he's had some horrific defenses to where he's been down, not just down going in the fourth quarter, down big, down 10, down 14, in a playoff game down 24-0 in the first half. AFC title game down 10-0 in the first half. Raiders this year down 17-0. I mean, last night, big whoop. The Chiefs are down 7 at halftime. Big whoop. Anybody concerned? I wasn't.
And for that,
no, not on that part of it.
Were you concerned at all during the whole game the Chiefs weren't going to win?
No.
No, me neither. Because you have Mahomes. The Broncos weren't worried about losing because they had Elway.
The you're not good because you're trailing in the fourth quarter argument is horrible because it's the NFL. These games are built to be one possession game. I mean, 75% of the spreads are one possession or less.
Yes.
That's how this league is built. That's what this league wants. And so,
and sometimes on some of these calls, you really do believe that that's what they want.
So, the margin of error is tight. So, yeah, I don't like that argument at all. But you're right. You're definitely right when you say you should enjoy this as it. Even if you're not a Chiefs fan, just enjoy
greatness.
Mm-hmm. Tiger Woods got taken away.
Yes.
Some of it got taken away. Magic Johnson, some of it got taken away. Michael Jordan kind of went away on his own for a little bit there. Mm-hmm. Bo Jackson got taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy this. I don't know what else to tell you.
You have to enjoy it. And last night, sure, I'm wondering about why we're running at 8 yards a carry and quit giving the ball to Pacheco. I still don't understand it. We'll get into that a little bit. But that doesn't ruin the night for me or ruin what 15-87 did last night. We're going to talk more about the Chiefs coming up in a little bit. Andy Reid, I thought, put it in pretty good perspective when he was asked about the chemistry of Kelce Mahomes. So wait, and you'll want to hear what he has to say. We'll hear from Mahomes as well. K-State football team, a big win at West Virginia, sets up the Sunflower Showdown at night on Saturday, and KU can spoil the party for K-State fans. KU got blown out, but it almost looked like they were ready to play K-State and looking ahead, which is crazy. They're playing Texas. Nebraska, well, you know, they lose. It's easy with Nebraska. Top 25, we'll go over that. KU men almost lost at home to Southern Utah on Friday night. K-State women and men are off to good starts. Klay Thompson maybe not washed up yet for the Golden State Warriors. And, oh, yeah, everybody's favorite sport in North Central Kansas, soccer. World Cup begins today in Qatar as the U.S. men's national team will be on the soccer field with their first match later this afternoon. But first, we'll throw it to Dusty. High school football championship games are set, and Thunder Ridge, the only one left standing in our coverage area.
Yes, the Longhorns won on Friday over Dighton, 58-12, to advance to the state championship game. They will face Axtell, who they were eliminated by last year in the sub-state round of the playoffs, so it's a rematch there.
Last two years, right?
3 years in a row that they'll play Axtell in the playoffs. The 2 years ago was in the first round that they lost.
And that was a game Thunder Ridge should have won.
Should have won it, and then Axtell beat them last year convincingly there in sub-state. So, big championship matchup, Axtell and Thunder Ridge coming up on Saturday. It'll be the early game at 11 there, Newton at Fisher Field. Field, the 8-man Division One championship. We'll have Little River taking on Wichita County in the other game there at Newton. Southeast of Saline saw their season come to a close, an outstanding game against Kingman on Friday night. Kingman won at 28-22 in double overtime. Kingman looked like they were going to have it sealed up, and then Southeast scored to put it into overtime. But Kingman was able to get the win, and they move on to the state championship game against Nemaha Central, who beat Sabetha 30-14. So that's the 2A state championship matchup coming up in Solana on Saturday. Also, 3A, it's Andale against Holton, Wamego from the NCKLs, and the 4A state championship against Bishop Miege. Mill Valley will play Mays in 5A, Manhattan against Gardner-Edgerton in 6A, and the six-man championship will have Cunningham against Ashland in Dodge City. So that's a look at the state championship game matchups. Actually, 1A also has Inman against St. Mary's. I skipped that one over, but you can find the complete brackets for the playoffs at ncksports.com.
All right, NCAA All-League football honors out after Southeast got eliminated.
Yep, and very well represented on that team, as expected. Grady Seifert, a first-team pick on both offensive line and defensive line.
Brody, stunning development.
Everybody's
there.
Shocked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Brody Widgerig was a first-team offensive lineman as well. Logan Arrowsmith, first-team at defensive back, and Logan Arrowsmith at running back, first-team, and Quinn Eilert was first-team defensive back for Beloit. Second-team picks included Benson Barrett at running back and Maddox Waters at tight end, Parker Isabel at linebacker, and Wesley Adolph at the Trojans was an honorable mention offensive line selection. There are way too many kids to go through the whole list. You can find the all NCAA team also at ncksports.com.
Hey, thoughts and prayers going out to Wes's dad, Todd. Yes. Adolph. He had a stroke recently, if you did not know, and so he is hopefully going to have a full recovery, and he'll have to go through rehab and everything. Todd's a good friend of ours, a good friend of mine. Him and I went to a Royals game here this past summer, and he's a big, huge baseball fan. Him and I have coached together for years, and so it was stunning to hear that he had a stroke. He's not that old.
No.
So we our thoughts and prayers go out to and best wishes go out to the Adolph family. The Chiefs win last night, and there's so many things to wrap our arms around. Chiefs beat the Chargers 30-27 in L.A., Chargers were up 20-13 at halftime. Chiefs regained the lead and looked like they were going to be able to maybe milk out the clock the final 5-6 minutes. And then McKinnon fumbles on the screen pass play after the Chiefs defense had forced a fumble by Keenan Allen. And Allen can a 40-yard pass on a 3rd and 18. And I was like, yeah, that's okay, with plenty of time. And, of course, the Chiefs score, as you heard moments ago, on a 17-yard pass to Travis Kelce, his third touchdown reception of the night. He's the first tight end since 1983 to have two games where he had three touchdown receptions or more. Can you name the tight end in 1983 that was the last tight end to do what Kelce's done now? He's in the same division as the Chiefs.
Seems like it might be a Winslow.
Yeah.
Nope.
Played
for the Raiders.
It just dropped out of my head.
He was an announcer as well. Color commentator.
Oh, my
on
goodness.
NBC. Passed away at a young age. He was retired, but.
Mustache guy,
yep.
Todd Christensen.
Todd Christensen. Yep.
Goodness,
Todd Christensen.
I was about to say Biletnikoff, and I'm like, that's not it.
He did pro football and college football color commentating. Did Todd Christensen. He was an outstanding tight end for the Raiders. He was the last guy to do that. Think about the math here. 39 years ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Kelce also had his 33rd 100-yard receiving game as a tight end. That's most by any tight end in NFL history, and he doesn't look like he's slowing down. The talk last night, some Twitter boards and everything else last night were saying, is Mahomes, and Mahomes actually said this after the game, that Kelce is the greatest tight end of all time. Now, I would say right now he's not. I would say based on where he's trending, if he just plays another 2 or 3 years, he will be. That would be my answer. I mean, his numbers are pretty insane, but they're, you know, Antonio Gates had a heck of a career. Obviously, Kellen Winslow had a heck of a career, and I'm sure I'm leaving a tight end and two out. He surpassed Gronkowski when it comes to the numbers, so I think the only thing Gronkowski has is he has rings. Well, he also had Brady, but Kelce does have Mahomes now.
Gronkowski was kind of the more, probably the last of the traditional
Shannon
two-way
Sharp
tight ends.
Shannon Sharp was an outstanding tight end. Sharp says Travis Kelce's best tight end all time.
Where Gronk would line up as a tight end on almost every play. You know, we do this thing now with Kyle Pitts and Kelce, where they kind of split out at times. So Gronk would probably be the best combination of blocker and receiver, but you know, when you're putting up numbers like Kelce, if you're going to consider him a tight end, then
he's a tight end.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no considering a tight end. He's a tight end. Tight ends can spread out. There's no law against a tight end, you know, not having to be on the right side of the wind. I mean, Kellen Winslow didn't always line up as a tight end on the offensive line. He spread out, too.
Before Travis Kelce, I have held firm.
Tony Gonzalez
is the best tight end in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
Before Travis Kelce came around. And so, and what do we, I'll listen to your argument for Rob Gronkowski, but he was not durable. He was hurt a lot, and his numbers should be.
He could be
way
a lot
better
higher.
Than Travis Kelce's, to be completely honest with you, if he'd have played every game every year.
Absolutely.
And I think that hurts him a little bit as far as his numbers are concerned. Right. But as far as what he could do, I'm not saying he wasn't as good as Tony Gonzalez. But I think the full package, I always have argued that Tony Gonzalez was the best tight end, and I didn't really think it was particularly close until guys like Travis Kelce are coming around now and kind of changing, even elevating what Tony did to change the game at the position. They're doing it even more right now.
Well, receiving yards, all-time tight ends, Tony Gonzalez is 15,000, and Tony had 1,300 receptions. Kelce's got 9,800 yards and 773 receptions. So he would have to probably play five more years to get to Gonzalez's numbers.
Yeah.
And that seems far-fetched because just the injuries, although he has been durable, knock on wood. The only guys ahead of Kelce in yardage in careers for tight ends is Shannon Sharp, Antonio Gates, Jason Witten is second, and Gonzalez is number one. So you could certainly argue, and by the way, Gonzalez had 111 receiving touchdowns. Gates had 116. Those are the top two in touchdowns. So you could argue the two best tight ends ever lived played for the Chiefs. Easily, sure. I could argue.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's no doubt Kelce's the best tight end now. And it cracks me up all the last so many years, everybody trying to compare him to Kittle and then compare him to Mark Andrews. They're just trying to come up with somebody to compare him to. You can't. He's the best. It's just like you keep coming up with Josh Allen compared to Mahomes, Herbert to Mahomes, you know, Joe Burrow to Mahomes, Lamar Jackson Mahomes. I mean, no. There's one tier. And there's only one person at the top of the pyramid, and that is Mahomes at quarterback and Kelce at tight end. And that's a big reason why the Chiefs are so good. They have the best player at each of those two positions in the National Football League. And quite honestly, I don't even think it's that close. I know people want to keep arguing it, but it's not really that close. I mean, last night, what Mahomes did without three of his top four receivers and without Tyreek Hill, who was, you know, traded in offseason, and he just, big deal. I'll go 23 of 30. What was he? 20 of 34 for 329. Three touchdowns, no interceptions. Kelce, 6 for 115, three touchdowns. Pacheco ran for over 100 yards. First 100-yard rusher for the Chiefs since week 4 of last year against the Eagles. More on that. Chiefs are 8-2, Chargers 5-5. Chiefs have a 4-game lead over the Chargers because they have the tiebreaker. They've won both head-to-head, 3-game lead. So this division is pretty much over. But Sky Moore, 5 catches for 63 yards. Justin Watson, a huge catch on 3rd and 17. Jody Fortson, an amazing throw by Mahomes to set him up 1st and goal at the 4. Fortson, I mean, I knew they'd have more three tight end groupings. Mm-hmm. And Reed is a genius when it comes to working with his personnel. And then you got, you know, Pacheco more involved running the ball, although first half not so much. But I'm sitting here and I'm like so glad that I am a fan of a team that has those star players, because for so many years I've had the team that tries really hard and, man, they're in the game. But when at the end of the day, I know we're not a contender to win a Super Bowl. I never felt like with Alex Smith at quarterback, the Chiefs were going to go to a Super Bowl. Never, ever felt that. Never. And he had Tyreek Hill at the very beginning of his career, and he had Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. So I never felt like the Chiefs were going to go to a Super Bowl with Alex Smith. And he was a good quarterback, and the Chiefs had good teams that won a couple division titles and won 12 games before Mahomes became the starter. But this Mahomes dude, as we know, is completely different. And is he going to take you down the field and score in the final 2 minutes every single time? No, he didn't against the Bills, right? Okay, it happens. And Tom Brady doesn't do it every single time.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers doesn't do it every single time. But Mahomes last night, he has the AFC West number. He does it with his arms. He does it with his legs. He did it again last night. You know, big. He just knows what to take. He's getting smarter at making his decisions in regards to not forcing things as much. And as he said after the game, when it's man-to-man coverage, I don't care who, I'm giving my boy Kelce a shot. So people could say, well, he's too reliant on Kelce. No, look at the numbers. He spreads it out, the 7 to 8 receivers, even when he's missing three of his top four. I mean, Kelce, yeah, he went to him when he's looking for a touchdown. Sure he did. But to get there on that final drive, or that drive that gave him the lead 23-20, he had the 3rd and 17 to Watson. He had a huge third down conversion to Moore before he ever got to Kelce. Mm-hmm. So Mahomes knows not to, like a lot of quarterbacks Mahomes' age would probably be like, dude, I'm looking at Kelce, and Kelce's option A, Kelce's option B, then I'll think about Sky Moore as option C. No, no, no. He just surveys it. He doesn't care who's out there. Whoever's open's open. And the thing that really got me is him and Sky Moore were on the same page all night long, and Sky Moore hasn't played a lot this year. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing to me as well. I was waiting for – the only thing that concerned me last night, I was waiting for Moore or Watson or somebody, even Tony when he was playing, one of those guys to run the wrong route and Mahomes anticipate he's going to do and he does an out, and it's an easy pick, and then people would blame the quarterback. Yeah. I was waiting for one of those plays. Never happened. And that's really good coaching, attention to detail, and it's pretty impressive.
Oh, he's on the same page. It's
with backup receivers,
yeah,
in essence.
And but you can tell that they work on that, and, well, sure, and they get the reps that they need to be at least know what he's going to do, right? And I think that's probably what's been most impressive, I think, about this whole stretch and run for the Chiefs and with Mahomes is, you know, I mean, like you said last year when you went to the game against the Steelers, I mean, Tyreek and Kelce were both out, right?
Hill played. He was banged up. He had one catch for 10 yards,
out, right? Like,
and Kelce was out with COVID, yeah. And he just went to Byron Pringle and Noah Gray.
Yeah, I mean,
and
Hill,
Hardman.
Hill was in, but he was out, yeah, you know? It's like he was not effective at all. Yeah. And so there have been times when he was out, and somebody just steps in, like a Byron Pringle, like you said, or somebody else, you know, that can do the job at that point in time. And you know, he had Sammy Watkins when he was healthy. He's had some guys that have been good. But, again, that's another example. When Sammy wasn't playing half the time, mm-hmm, somebody else had to step in and take those reps, and they were usually on the same page fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're going to get some guys that don't get on the same page, i.e. Josh Gordon, that are not going to get their opportunities, and they're not going to be able to play in this offense because mm-hmm they're not on the same page, and they're not doing the right things that Mahomes wants them to do or that Andy Reid wants them to do,
right,
or Eric Bieniemy, whoever's setting all that up at the time. And so you've got to take your opportunities when you get them, and I think that's as much part of it of being on the same page is that these younger guys want to show that they can do it too.
Yeah, it's a competition.
And they know that if I want an opportunity, not just here, but maybe in the future. I mean, Byron Pringle got paid because of Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
How many guys got paid because of Peyton Manning and Tom Brady go somewhere else and fall off the cliff?
Yeah, and now Byron's hurt this year, and yep, he hasn't really been playing much for the Bears. And,
he got his money, though.
Yeah, and he got paid because mm-hmm of Patrick Mahomes. And so, I mean, that's all part of it. It's maybe I'm not going to get the time to play here in Kansas City because I'm behind too many guys mm-hmm to get all the reps that I really want. Mm-hmm. But if I show out and do some things here, mm-hmm, I can do a lot of things somewhere else, or at least I can get money somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, it's all impressive to see what he does. You know, last night I'm watching the game, and I at the end of the game, or the, not the end of the game, but the last 2 minutes there when the Chargers got inside the 10, I'm just like, let them score. Like,
oh,
there's too many times. There's a couple times where Andy's maybe had some timeouts in his back pocket and he trusted the defense there. Mm-hmm. And then the time runs out because he didn't use timeouts and they score late and there's no time for the Chiefs to go score again. And I'm like, just in case he decides to be weird here and try to trust his defense, but luckily he called the timeout.
Well, I will say this, and Andy most of the time has done that. He's called the timeouts in those situations. The game of the Bengals, he used all his timeouts,
yeah,
and he still couldn't stop the clock. I mean, the Bengals milked the final 6 minutes. Like, I think they had like 10 plays inside the 20, and because all they needed was a field goal. Andy's not great at time management, but he's not that bad. I can't even think of a game necessarily where he just flat out refused to call timeouts and went in the locker room and lost the game without calling timeouts in that situation. So he's not that bad at it. But anyway,
they got the thing. Good.
But here's the thing, though.
Let's go score.
Here's my point, though. He should have called one before the 2 minute warning.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Now looking at it, he's genius.
Yeah.
Because that would have had more time on the clock for the Chargers had he done that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of the equation. I know how much time I need.
Maybe that's what was going through my mind too.
Right.
Is like you could call this now,
right,
and get a free timeout here,
right,
and get more time when you get the ball back if you let them score here.
Right. But Randy's like, I know how much time I need. 13 seconds is exactly enough for a field goal. I'll tell you the other thing. Well, let's hear from the guys first, and then we'll break down some of this stuff, because there's one thing I want to point out, and I've said this once or twice before on the show before about last year's AFC title game against the Bengals, and I'll tell you something I truly believe, and I'll believe it till I'm 6 feet under, and we'll get to it in a moment. Here's Andy Reid on another game-winning drive by 15.
We just went in and saying, this is what we have to do. Pat doesn't worry about all that. He just goes in and plays. I mean, these guys, as far as practicing it, we spent so much time on that during camp working on it. And for it to pay off is a good thing. And it seems like every time we come here, it comes down to something like this. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but it's funny. Early in the broadcast, Tirico and Collins were like, you know, this game, so forth and so on. I'm like, dude, it's going to come down the final drive. It always does with the Chargers and Chiefs. And here's Mahomes on that game-winning drive.
We do this a lot. Coach Reed prepares us for these moments. We knew we had a lot of time on the clock. We knew we had some timeouts, so we didn't rush. We just kind of went through what we do every single day at practice and everything like that. We executed. And I thought, obviously Travis, it's Travis. He's the greatest tight end of all time. He makes plays like that that win games. I thought a lot of young guys stepped up, and some guys that did not necessarily have those major roles stepped up on that drive as well. And so it's good to see with all those young guys out there.
We mentioned Jody Fortson stepped up, Justin Watson with a couple big catches, Sky Moore came up big, Pacheco, of course, was really good last night. Here's Mahomes on those younger players stepping up.
We had a lot of new faces, man, and to see them excel in moments like these is special, because obviously we've done it in this organization for a little bit now, but to have those new guys step right in and make those plays is special, not only on the offense, but, I mean, you look at the defense, man. I mean, it seemed like at one point all the DBs were rookies or new guys, and so, George, I mean, we've done a great job of bringing a lot of talented players in here, and they've stepped up and made plays happen.
And we mentioned Pacheco. He ran for over 100 yards last night. Here's Reed on one of those young guys on offense and how he's coming along.
His patience, I thought, was good. We've been working on that, and I thought he did a nice job with that. So not necessarily speed to the hole, but speed through the hole. And you could see him let the offensive lineman get it set up and work to the linebacker level guys and then go and hit it as opposed to being indecisive.
And we talked about that chemistry between Mahomes and Kelce, and how we all in Chiefs Kingdom need to sit back and just absolutely soak in how good those two are working together. Here is Andy Reid summing that up.
We're a part of it, and that's the fun part. You'd like it to last forever, but these guys grow old, and you know, it's not. So what I do is I try to enjoy every minute of it, every play, and their chemistry is ridiculous. You know, coming into this game that they had a plan for Kels, and you know, we were able to, or he was able to work, he and Pat were able to work through it and made some nice things happen.
Yeah, I'd say 3 touchdowns. That's nice things happening there. Understatement by Andy. So many places I want to go with this game and what happened last night, but let me start with this part. A lot of Chiefs fans are also Kansas City Royals fans. And you may be saying, oh, dear goodness, where are you going with this? In 2014 and 2015, the Royals went to the World Series. I think we all were like, we better enjoy this because the Royals aren't normally in these situations. And now, 7 years later, we're still basking in the glow of a World Series win in 2015, and this team, the Royals, haven't had a winning season since. They've had a couple of 100 loss seasons, and they fired Dayton Moore, and they fired Mike Matheny. And we said it at the time, you better enjoy this run by the Royals, because before you know it, we'll be looking back. I mean, David Glass is dead. The owner of the Royals is gone. Ned Yost doesn't manage anymore. You know, Hosmer and Moose are shells of themselves. Wade Davis has barely got anything left. I mean, some of the big time, Lorenzo Cain just retired. Alcides Escobar's in the minor leagues. I mean, things change. And that's what Andy Reid's saying in that comment is, listen, we're all getting older. And time flies by so quickly. You know, Marty Schottenheimer passed away recently. I mean, I remember when Marty Schottenheimer came in and changed the Chiefs completely around to where they always were in the playoffs and beating the Raiders every year and battling the Broncos. And yes, they didn't win as well much as they should have in the playoffs and so forth and so on. But Marty Schottenheimer, I remember his passion, his energy, how those teams were. They were physical. They ran the ball, play action, great defensive teams usually. Neil Smith, Derek Thomas, James Hastie, among others. And then all of a sudden, he's dead. He died. And he's in his 70s. Listen, Andy Reid's no spring chicken. We're talking about enjoying Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes. We need to enjoy Andy Reid. Because Andy Reid might only coach in there to 5 years. And 10 years from now, or 15 from now, we may be talking about and doing a eulogy about Andy Reid and how, man, those were the days, man. Can you believe people thought that he wasn't good enough to be in the Hall of Fame unless he won a Super Bowl? Look at the wins he had. Look at how many Super Bowls he ended up going to, how many he won. I mean, we got to enjoy and appreciate Andy Reid as well. And I know we criticize play calling. That's easy to do. We can criticize being stubborn and not running the football. I mean, that's coaches always get criticized. That's part of the deal. But they're part of the deal, the biggest part of their deal is win. And they win. I mean, we can complain and nitpick about what happened last night, which we'll do in a little bit. But the bottom line is they won. Does it help to have Mahomes? Sure, but he didn't have Mahomes, and he still was making it to the NFC title game 4 straight years. Okay, it's not he didn't have Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill in Philadelphia, and his leading receivers, Todd Pinkston, with like 600 yards receiving, he made it to the NFC title game. So don't sit here and tell me that Andy Reid, well, he's just lucky. He's got these great quarterbacks, and he's got the Alex Smith won 12 games. They won the division 2 years in a row before Mahomes became a starter. So we got to appreciate Andy Reid and what he does. We need to appreciate greatness that is Travis Kelce, who may end up being the best tight end of all time. If not, he's one of the best already. We're watching maybe the greatest quarterback of all time. And I say maybe. I'm not saying, and I'm not judging Mahomes on he has to have 8 rings to beat Brady to be the greatest of all time. If Mahomes gets 4 or 5 rings, he's right there. Now, if he only wins 1, I don't think I can put him up there maybe as high. But if he wins a few, I think he's definitely in the discussion. Because of what he does, he's way more athletic than Tom Brady ever was or is. But at the same time, Brady was a winner. But Brady also had good defenses most of the time. Mahomes obviously has a great coach, as did Tom Brady, so forth and so on. Brady didn't have maybe as many offensive weapons that Mahomes has, in fairness, to be objective. You know, Brady didn't have – he had Randy Moss 1 year, and they went 18-0. So we know what Brady did when he had a Hall of Fame receiver. And he had Gronkowski hurt a lot, but when he was healthy, he was great in a Hall of Fame tight end. The point I'm making is – last night after the game, I turned to my oldest son and I said, we really need to enjoy this. We are completely spoiled. Chiefs fans, you are the Bronco fans of the Elway days. You are completely spoiled. Colts, Chiefs fans, you are the Colts fans of the Peyton Manning days. You are the 49ers of the Joe Montana days. All right? You're the Dallas Cowboys winning 3 titles in 4 years, except the Chiefs haven't done that. But they've been the 4 straight AFC title games. Andy Reid just said it. This will not last forever, all right? We all get old. It happens to the best. That's why I've tried to tell people, quit getting all caught up in the LeBron versus Michael Jordan debate. You're wasting time putting down the two greatest players perhaps that ever lived, and you're nitpicking. It's like a political race where you have nothing good to say about your guy, so you got to tear down the other guy. Those guys are the greatest of all time. Okay? Nobody, who cares who's number one and who's number two? We all agree they're two of the greatest players of all time. And while you're doing all that, LeBron's now 38.
As of being the second best basketball player to ever play the
game.
It's
horrible.
Is some type of failure.
A complete failure.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
It is the absolute, I hate that argument.
I do.
I hate it. I don't mind doing the Michael versus
LeBron. Same thing,
LeBron
Tom Brady thing. Versus Mahomes, yeah. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, same thing.
It's fun to sit here and argue about it, but to really take it serious and start...
It's stupid.
Downgrading people because of this, that, or the other, and then calling them failures because they're the second best player or second best quarterback or the 10th best quarterback or whatever.
It's ridiculous.
It is. We just have the wrong idea about this. Have fun with it, but that's just it. Have fun. Like, celebrate that they're this good. You know, it's just...
LeBron James, he was the anointed one. He came out of high school, and then he's lived up all the hype. And it's like people were jealous of him from the very beginning, and he's done nothing wrong off the court in regards to getting in trouble with the law or anything. He's been a pretty model citizen. Now, you might not agree with some of his viewpoints, but do you agree with everybody's viewpoints? No, you always disagree at some point with somebody. But we got to appreciate greatness when we have it. And this is what the Chiefs have. The Chiefs have greatness in Andy Reid. They have greatness in Patrick Mahomes. They have greatness in Travis Kelce. They had greatness in Tyreek Hill. Hopefully you appreciated him while he was in Kansas City, because he's on route to a 2,000-yard season with the Dolphins. Because you don't know tomorrow. You don't know if tomorrow in practice, or they won't practice tomorrow probably, but anyway, later this week, you don't know if Travis Kelce is going to have a horrible injury. You don't know if Mahomes is going to be in a car accident. You don't know if Andy Reid is going to have a heart attack. I mean, you don't know these things. We take them all for granted, right? We do that in life. We do that every day. We say bye to our wife. We say bye to our girlfriend. We say bye to our kids, or we say bye to our mom or dad when we visit them. And we don't know if that's the last time we're ever going to see them, or last time that they're fully healthy. I mean, we don't know. I mean, I just talked about a friend of mine had a stroke at a young age. I mean, that came out of left field, clearly. Nobody expects it. So the point is, enjoy life, but also enjoy being a fan of guys that are tremendous, tremendous players. But also, do it the right way, too. Mahomes and Kelce aren't out there getting in trouble with the law. They're model citizens. And there's some flamboyance to them, but they back it up. In fact, the flamboyance usually comes after they do it. They don't necessarily go all flamboyant and say, we're going to do this or that. They just go ahead and do it, and then they enjoy the winning. So we really, really need to appreciate 15-87 and how great they are. And hopefully we appreciate the Royals in 14-15. And hopefully, we appreciate, because 10 years from now, 5 years from now, we may be talking about the Chiefs are 2-14. The wrong coach is in place. And good luck following Andy Reid as the next head coach. Good luck being the next quarterback to follow Patrick Mahomes.
Right. I thought you had a good point with the Royals and the Chiefs. Also with the Royals, you knew that window with those guys was shorter.
Yeah. Mahomes, you just take it for granted. It's big.
Yeah, yeah. And being the smaller market baseball team or whatever, you knew eventually Moustakas or Hosmer or Kane were going to go somewhere else.
Yep.
At least, thank goodness, the Chiefs have had the force.
There's a salary cap. That helps.
That helps. But they've said, hey, we are going to invest in Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. We are going to give him this big second contract, and we want him here forever. Yes. And I know it's not exactly apples to apples, the two leagues, but it's another thing. That helps. That helps you appreciate that they're going to be here for a long time. We have every reason to believe that Travis Kelce is going to be a Chief for as long as he wants play. So that helps a lot.
No doubt. So let's talk about the game a little bit last night. So I talked about the young players that stepped up on offense, but what about the defense? Okay, the defense didn't look good early, but at one point last night, after Juan Thornhill left the game with an injury, the Chiefs had all rookies in the secondary except for L'Jarius Sneed and Justin Reed. You had... At one point on the field, and late in the game, I saw this. Brian Cook is one of your safeties. Trent McDuffie and Josh Williams are your two corners. And then Jalen Watson's a third corner, and Sneed is on the slot. That's a young secondary, man. And Chris Collinsworth mentioned it. Have that many rookies playing on a defense, and we got better because we're more athletic. We're taller. We're rangier as corner. Taller corners. We're more athletic. And, losing Sorensen and Neiman and replacing him with Gay and Darius Harris and replacing Matthew with Justin Reed. I mean, we got younger and actually saved money by doing it and got better. And that's what I said with the Tyreek Hill trade. That would allow us to do that, and it has. Chris Jones last night, I've been critical of Chris Jones because I think he has a motor that should go more often. I think when he really, really, really wants to go, he's really, really, really good. Last night, I thought he was terrific.
Yeah.
I thought Chris Jones was terrific last night. I mean, he blew up some plays for the Chargers in the backfield. There was a third and inches play he blew up, and the Chargers punted. Last year, Staley would have gone for it. They punted. Came up big at the end and forced that interception that Bolton picked off. But I want to point to this. The Chiefs were in a tough spot. Before halftime, remember the Chiefs went 3-and-out, and the Chargers got the ball, and they're up 17-13. They score a touchdown. They're up 24-13. Then they get the ball to start the second half and could have gone up 31-13. This was a huge part of the game. We get all caught up in Mahomes and Kelce and Reed and the offense. But last night, to me, that's where the game could have been lost. Instead, the Chiefs hold the Chargers to a field goal. So it's 20-13 at the end of the half. And the second half, the Chargers get the ball first, and the Chiefs force, I think it was a three and out. And the Chiefs get the ball back, and then, of course, they control. And Andy Reid must have got a memo at halftime. Hey, man, you might want to run that Pacheco dude. He's averaging 8.2 yards a carry in the first half. So then Andy goes the opposite. No run him hardly at all in the first half. Andy then runs him like every single play, and then McKinnon. And then you have a third and inches, and they got eight in the box, and you got Burton in. It's like play action, and you have a touchdown. No, we're going to play smash mouth football now because we think we're a physical team because we've had one drive where we run it down their throats. It's like, Andy, the fans are screaming at you to run the ball more often. They're not saying run it every play. All right? We're not saying that. We're saying run it a little bit more often, especially if you're averaging 8 yards a carry and you're missing three of your top four receivers. So Andy did go to the running game. That established some things, shockingly. And then the Chiefs, I think, were fine the rest of the way. So that cracked me up. Pacheco over 100 yards, as we mentioned, first time since week four last year against the Eagles. The Chiefs had a 100-yard rusher. You know, the forced fumble against Keenan Allen looked like it was going to be the game saver. The McKinnon fumbled. You give up third and 18, no big deal. They score a touchdown. Chiefs have plenty of time. Mahomes does it with his legs and his arm. So here's the thing I told my son, and we were watching the game last night. When the Chiefs got the ball, I said, you know what's awesome about this scenario? He's like, what? I said, the Chiefs have to have a touchdown. And I'll go back and I'll say this till the cows come home, and I know I'm going back to a negative time, but last year in the AFC title game, if the Chiefs are down four, I am convinced that game never goes overtime and the Chiefs go for a touchdown. But because they were down three, and because of what happened right before halftime when they wasted 3 points because Mahomes threw it short to Tyreek Hill, that play call, that decision by Mahomes, Hill running the wrong, he turned the wrong way, by the way, on that play. Anything, you want to blame Mahomes, Hill, Bieniemy, Reed, whatever, for wasting 3 points, I was okay for them going for it and trying to go for the kill shot. But that play and what happened as a result really, to me, dictated the Chiefs not trying to score a touchdown, and Mahomes was gun-shy because he didn't want to screw up giving up, leaving another 3 points on the field and losing in regulation. So if that game last year, the Chiefs are down four, there is no doubt in my mind the Chiefs go down. Mahomes is going to be a little bit freer because he's like, listen, field goal doesn't do me any good. I got to go get seven. Last night, Chargers, Chiefs, Chargers up 27-23. I'm like, dude, this is the best thing that has. The Chiefs know they have to go get a touchdown. That's not, hey, let's get to the 35, let Butker bail us out. It's no, we need a touchdown. And when the Chiefs know they need a touchdown, they're really, really good. Really, really good?
They are, yeah, for sure. It's, yeah, I mean, I feel comfortable when I know they need a touchdown all the time, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's just like, unless there's 10 seconds on the clock and you're at the 10-yard line. Like,
yeah, well, 13 seconds, you get a field goal.
Yeah,
Bills,
but we're talking about a touchdown.
Oh, I know but I mean? I'm just saying that with 13 seconds, they're able to get in field goal range. So you got a minute 46, you should get a touchdown.
Absolutely. When they have the time, I'm never worried about it.
Yeah, now, right.
They, like I said, if it's 10 seconds on the clock and they need a touchdown, I'm a little worried at that point.
Sure,
but even 13 seconds, you know, if they need a touch, they need six, I'm concerned.
Yes.
But if they need three to get into field goal range, obviously 12 seconds we have established is now all you need.
Right.
You get the
but it's, now. You know, it's, I feel comfortable in that situation because, listen, I was watching with a buddy last night and I told him, I was like, just let them in right now. Like, whenever they want to get in, just let them in because there's plenty of time for Mahomes to go down and score a touchdown. Like, you don't doubt it. You don't second guess it. You're like, I would rather have 2 minutes than 22 seconds when they get into the end zone here. So just
But that was never going to happen. In that scenario last night, that was never going. The only way that was going to happen is if the Chiefs had a defensive hold and it was going to reset the first down. That was not going to happen. The Chiefs were going to have well over a minute no matter what the Chargers did. They were either going to stop them and they're going to get a field goal or they were going to score. So I wasn't all about letting them in so quickly at that point because first of all, the Chiefs had two timeouts and there's still plenty of time. So, and by the way, you know, people get caught up in that let them score thing, which I understand to an extent, but I think we've gone overboard because it's not that I understand let them score when the Chiefs defense is so god awful that your only chance to win, but the Chiefs defense wasn't god awful. It isn't god awful this year. And last night, you know, you're talking about let them score, but Justin Herbert goes back to pass. It gets batted in the air. that is easily could be an interception, and you win the game there, and you're sitting here, and that would go against the people saying you just let him score. I mean, the Chiefs can get a sack. They could get a strip sack fumble. They can sack and make them kick a field goal. Why do you automatically let them take the lead? Obviously, you can't have that mentality. You've got to be sitting here going, listen, we got to hold them a three. If we hold them then we go down and we get a three, or we go to overtime, we win the game. Why do we have to just go ahead and automatically let them score a touchdown and go up four to where a field goal is not even an option for us? Although I think for the Chiefs, it's a good thing it's not an option. Because last night, when they had first and goal at the four or second goal at the five, whatever it was, Herbert threw the pass. It was batted back, and that easily could be picked off. Now, the thing that helped the Chargers on that play, because that should have been an incomplete pass, which would have stopped the clock again, and you wouldn't need to let them score. But he caught it, and then that kept the clock running, and they burned the timeout. But I do think we're going a little bit too far with the we got to let him score. We don't have to let him score with 2:08 to go. We don't only have to let him score with 1:45 to go. We need to probably, if it's about 1 minute or less, okay, and we're showing no propensity to stop him, okay, I'm with you. I'll listen to the argument. But we know the Chiefs can do things in a short amount of time, and I think that factors into Andy Reid's decision. Like, we can go down and score right away. And you may say, well, our defense isn't good enough. Let's put our offense's hands. Well, the offense goes down and scores in 50 seconds. Now it's back in your defense's hands again. Okay? And Herbert has a minute to play. It's a very tough thing as a coach, I think, to your job is to score. Your job is to stop on defense. Your job is to win the game. But we have seen some coaches a few times now in the National Football League try to milk the clock along with trying to get the win all at the same time to have their milk and cookies, and it blows up in their face. And I think that's a really very tough and critical thing to put on coaches is, hey, you guys scored. Yeah, but you left too much time on the clock. Dear God, your defense has paid money to stop people too. Mm. And by the way, when the Chiefs scored last night, I ain't gonna lie to you. I said, they left too much time on the clock, and the Chargers had 31 seconds, and I'm sitting here going, Dicker the kicker's going to kick a 58-yarder, and we're going to overtime. I told my son, we're going to overtime, because we left too much time on the clock. But I wasn't mad at the Chiefs for scoring with 31, because guess what? They didn't score last year against the Bengals on the final drive and had to settle for a field goal. You get the touchdown, and then you move on.
Right. If you have to have the touchdown, if it's 4 to 6 or whatever, you just get the touchdown.
Get the touchdown.
You can't worry about that stuff. The ultimate could have let him score and nobody would have argued situation was that Patriots Seahawks Super Bowl. Belichick could have said, all right, let him score.
And he didn't. And he got an interception at the goal line. That's correct.
So I can see why you never, I hate the word never, but I can see why you don't think that way.
Sure.
Either it just doesn't cross your mind. So, but I also see situations where it is probably the smarter play to let them score and your offense has a chance. But
I want to clarify what I'm saying.
I think when the Chiefs defense is horrific as it once was, I'm all for that thinking. But this defense is better.
No, I want to clarify what I'm saying too. Is I'm saying let them score as a fan. I don't want my defense to have that mentality of just let them in the end zone. I'm saying is I know who I've got at quarterback. I know how much time he needs to go down and win the game.
Right.
And a factor in is what you're talking about. You feel better about him going down and scoring a touchdown when they're down four instead of just settling for a field goal.
Now, if it's a tie game, I'm cool with settling a field goal.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's what would have happened. If you stop them yesterday, they would have kicked a field goal, been a tie game. So what's wrong with that equation?
Well, that part didn't factor into my mind. I felt like the Chargers.
But it should, though, shouldn't it?
You're
okay with them. Listen, that's the thing I don't understand about this equation. You're okay with them taking a 4-point lead and not trying to keep to keep it as a tie game? Like, you're up three at the moment. You're not even behind, all right? You're not down one. You're not even tied. I mean, you are up 3 points. The mentality is let them have a 4-point lead, and they're not even at the one; they're at the five.
The mentality for me is in these
situations, to go down 4 points.
So many times that the Chiefs defense gives up the score.
There have been times where they haven't.
I mean, with the way that was going, I was really confident the Chargers were going to get into the end zone, and so it's like, okay, if they get in quicker, that leaves us more time,
right,
to go score ourselves.
Right.
Factoring in the field goal wasn't even in my mind because I was about 99% confident the Chargers were going to score a touchdown there. Mm-hmm. And so if I
did.
If that's in my mind that I think that's going to happen, that's why I have the mentality. I don't want my defense to have that mentality. I want the defense to make the stop.
Right.
That's what I want, right? But if I have the mentality in my mind that I'm pretty confident they're probably going to get a touchdown here, then, yeah, let them in, and so we have more time to go down and score. I don't want – and I know it wouldn't have been that scenario where it would have been 13 seconds, but
listen,
that's my mentality as a fan. That's not what I want as a fan of my defense. I want them to make the stop. But.
As I said, I kind of understand it. Like if the Chiefs have one timeout or no timeouts and it's about under a minute – and they're in that situation where they're first in goal. Now, I'm like, yeah, I want to. I got to see. It's a little bit different. The Chiefs had the timeouts, and there was more time on the clock. Now, I'm with. Here's the part we got to differentiate. If the Chargers have the ball in that situation, first and goal at the four, all right, and the Chiefs are out of timeouts, the Chargers are probably going, hey, we'll go ahead and run a play, the first play, to where we're going to try to drain clock, and we still have time then to score the game-winning touchdown. That's when I think you let them score.
That's 100%.
That's when you let them score.
Yeah.
Because, especially if you know a field goal beats you, you let them score in that situation, too. Like with the Bengals last year, should have just let them score. But with 2 minutes to go, minute 50 to go, when you have a couple timeouts, I think it's way too early to say, yeah, just let him score. The defense in the second half, by the way, that was the only points they gave up the whole second half. So it's not like this defense is from 18.
Right. And I think you were saying, like, as a strategy, you wanted to let them. I think you're saying it's way more fun to talk about it this morning as Mahomes throwing a touchdown pass to Kelce in the final 2 minutes than it would have been just for like Trent McDuffie to knock down a fourth down pass.
No,
I would much rather have all that. I'd much rather the defense make the stop.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Is like, but
I'm just saying he didn't have faith in the defense to get the
stop. I understand
my
that,
feeling of after you've gotten a third and 18 and you've gotten the ball inside the five.
Right.
Like my feeling is they're probably zoned in and going to score right now.
Right.
That's my feeling, and that's why I have that feeling of just let him in now, and let's go down and
score. But if Chris Jones gets a sack, now all of a sudden it's second goal at the 15. Now you they're probably kicking a field goal,
100%.
And now you've got time to get a field goal. You don't only go length of the field, and you even have the luxury of knowing you could go to overtime. You can't lose it in regulation. Right. So I guess it's somewhat of a defeatist attitude when you say let him score. But at the same time, I understand it. It's just my question is, how do you differentiate in what type of situation do you let them score? I'm just saying last night, that was way too early to consider letting them score.
Wasn't the situation to do that. I'm no way saying last night was the situation where you go into a huddle and say, let them score. No, not last night.
I mean, there's
all.
Probably like one or two scenarios in an entire defensive coordinator's career that they're going to be like, let them score.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Listen, like I said, I'm saying that because I just knew that the Chargers were going to get in the end zone in my mind,
And well, I knew the Chiefs were going to have plenty of time whether they did or they didn't, and they were going to win the game. That's how I felt. So I wasn't concerned because I knew the Chargers couldn't get the clock all the way down like the Bengals did. I knew they couldn't. So I wasn't freaking out about it. I wasn't even worried about letting them score because I knew the Chiefs would have time because they had timeouts.
And it was also not the AFC Championship game or Super Bowl. So you know, the Chiefs still would have had a lead in the division and all that stuff.
But if the Chiefs lost last night, it wouldn't have been in the world. We've established they have an easy schedule the rest of the way. I mean, the winning last night, I don't know how. The Chiefs, to me, have to fall apart and have key injuries, Kelce and Mahomes or Chris Jones, for this team not to get the one seed now. One up and you got an easy schedule the rest of the way. Even if you lose at Cincinnati, which I don't think they're going to because that's payback, and Jamar Chase might not even play. But the Chiefs schedule the rest of the way, folks. It's the Rams at home. They're a 14-point favorite over defending Super Bowl champs. The Rams are 3-7, and they're a mess, and no Cooper Kupp. They have no offensive weapons. And then at Cincinnati, that's the only tough game that got left. Denver on the road at Houston. I know Denver rival, blah, blah, blah. Seattle at home, Denver at home, the Raiders on the road, and Raiders will pack it in. That'll be last week of the season. The two tough games left on paper at Cincy, Seattle at home, and of course you feel pretty good against Seattle at home, and Seattle's overachieved. So you're sitting here going, at worst, the Chiefs are probably going 6-1 the rest of the way, and they're 14-3. Dude, I'm sorry, but the only way they don't get the one seed is Baltimore and Miami wins out. or Buffalo. Mm-hmm. That's the only way you don't get the one. Anybody think everybody else is going to win seven in a row?
No.
I don't.
No.
I know the Chargers have been a little beat up, and they actually looked really good last night. And
Mike Williams got hurt right away.
And they're a team that could make a little bit of a run. I don't think they're going to. Yeah, but, you know, I do find it funny that there were some tweets out there. The AFC West spent about $250 million to compete, and it's over by Thanksgiving.
Yes, that was a good quote. Yeah. I like that one. So we talked, you know, another thing I want to mention is the offensive line was, you know, early on struggled a little bit, but did you notice on the final drive for the Chiefs that Jerick McKinnon was chipping Khalil Mack every single play? They didn't even have McKinnon go out on a pass pattern. They had one less guy that they normally would have so they could protect Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. And you know what I think that attributed to? That's attributed to what Von Miller and the Bills did to the Chiefs late in that game in Kansas City. I mean, that's a change in philosophy, and I like that. Because Khalil Mack didn't really do much last night, but he's still obviously respected. And Wiley had help with McKinnon chipping Mack every single play on that final drive. And Mahomes had obviously plenty of time to decide whether he wanted to run up the middle or throw. So the offensive line, you know, when it's played well, this team is unbeatable. When the offensive line has struggled, then this team is, you know, scraping, scratching, trying to find a way to win like they did against the Titans. So a couple of things, too. The Chiefs have won 14. They're 14-0 on the road against the AFC West with Mahomes at quarterback. That's insane. 25 straight November and December wins. That's insane. They're missing three of the top four wide receivers. Okay, Kelsey's a tight end. Hardman, Juju, and Tony. Tony, hamstring is, I hope he doesn't become the next Sammy Watkins where he's always hurt. You know, great talent, but always hurt. Pacheco, the kick return. I laugh hysterically when announcers, and by the way, the announcers do a great job last night. I think Tirico's terrific. I think Collinsworth's very good. But they talked, some one of them mentioned a rookie mistake. That's the biggest cop out of all time. Isaiah Pacheco, everything that he did so well last night, and he looks better at running back. He's hitting the hole a little bit better. He's got the speed. He's got the burst. He's got the power. And if he can run like he did last night, the Chiefs are going to be in great shape. Of course, the Chargers are one of the worst rush defenses in the league, so let's, you know, calm down a little bit about what Pacheco did. But it was nice to see him improve. Clyde Edwards-Helaire got banged up with an ankle. He may be on IR, which may help the Chiefs not have to go with three running backs. But if McKinnon or Pacheco gets hurt, then you're going to have to, you know, guess what? That's why you kept Ronald Jones as insurance, I guess. Ronald Jones may still have an impact on this team in the final weeks of the year in the playoffs. We never know with injuries. But I'm looking at Pacheco on the kick return. Listen, that's not a rookie mistake. He returned kicks in college, too. All right, the rules in high school, college, and a pro are no different. If a ball is going towards a sideline, you go put one foot out of bounds, and you catch it. And then the ball is out of bounds, and it's a penalty. Instead, the Chiefs start at the 5, and they say, oh, it's a rookie mistake. I'll listen to a rookie mistake if the rules in the NFL are completely different in that scenario than high school and college. It isn't. I know of a local high school football player that knows how to do that correctly because I've seen it done. So don't tell me that was a rookie mistake. He can't make that mistake in the playoffs. Bolton, the late hit out of bounds. People are like, oh, that's weak, blah, blah. No, that's a personal foul. The quarterback was a yard out of bounds, and Bolton shoved him. Did he flop a little bit? Sure. If Mahomes does that, Chiefs fans are rejoicing or screaming for a flag. Bolton does that. Oh, you know, it wasn't that bad of a hit. It's still not a smart play by Bolton. All right? But Bolton is one of the best tacklers in the league.
Oh, yeah.
And he came up big with the interception at the end. He forced a fumble on Keenan Allen hustling down the field. Nick Bolton, you got to give Brett Veach a lot of credit for that draft pick. So the Chiefs win. They're 8-2. And what do you know? They're going to win the AFC West again, shockingly, without Tyreek Hill. Amazing. Who could have thunk it? Oh, that's right. We did. Right here on this show. As did a lot of other people, but a lot of people, we were on board the very day Hill was traded, and a lot of people jumped on that wagon way after, and that's okay. You're welcome to get on it, but we can say we told you so on that. The NFL, you know, I told you so. You know how that goes. NFL, over the weekend, the Falcons beat the Bears, the Ravens beat the Panthers, the Panthers can't score, Ravens are 7-3. If the Ravens and Chiefs both win out, Chiefs will be the number one seed. If the Chiefs trip up and the Ravens win out, it is possible the Ravens will be the one seed in the AFC. Bills win over the Browns after they moved the game to Detroit. Did you see the pictures of the cars buried in the snow?
I did.
Dear Lord, 6 feet of snow in Buffalo. Commanders win at the Texans. Every team in the NFC East has a winning record now. The Eagles pull one out of the fire. They were trailing the whole game against the Colts in Indy, but they win. Eagles 17-16. They're now 9-1. The Patriots score on a punt return with 7 seconds remaining. first punt return for a score this year in the NFL. Patriots beat the Jets, who were, as their coach said, was dog bleep on offense. Did you see his quote after the game? He was right. Jets had 103 yards of offense. Patriots win 10-3. My youngest son picked up the Patriots defense for fantasy. That worked out pretty well. Saints beat the Rams, who have no weapons now, 27-20. Rams are 3-7, come to Arrowhead on Sunday. The Lions beat the Giants. Giants fall to 7-3. The Raiders, with a walk-off touchdown to Devontae Adams to beat the Broncos. Listen, I'm not a big Raider fan, but I enjoyed that. I don't know why, but I enjoyed that. Raiders and Broncos both 3-7.
Yeah, that's why I enjoyed it, because they're both 3-7. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Cowboys pace the Vikings 40-3. Vikings have, listen to this, the Vikings have a negative point differential and they're 8-2 because they've won seven games by one score and then got blown out yesterday. Yeah. Cowboys look really good, 7-3 now. Bengals beat the Steelers. They're 6-4 and coming on, although Chase is out, but they get him back, look out. And the Chiefs, of course, win 30-27. Tonight, Kyler Murray not expected to play. Cardinals hosting the Niners. Cardinals need a win badly. That's in Mexico, Monday Night Football on ESPN. All right, college football over the weekend. The K-State Wildcats taking care of business. You remember that song by Bachman Turner Overdrive? Taking care of business.
Field, the other tight end, Wheeler, on the left side of the formation. Howard's going to hand off. Deuce Vaughn running right. He's got an alley into the end zone. Touchdown, K-State.
Well, no defense in the first half of this game whatsoever by either team, as K-State, the opening TD run there by Deuce, Sincere Mason with a pick six, Wildcats up 14-0. West Virginia got back. They had a pick six, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Missed an extra point, which came with theme.
28-19 after one quarter. K-State was up 41-25 at halftime, and then not much offense because they got tired of scoring, I guess, the offense did in the second half. Malik Knowles had a big day. Will Howard played very well. K-State defense gave up 241 yards in the first half to West Virginia, but did play better in the second half. K-State's 8-3, 6-2 in the Big 12. West Virginia drops to 4-7, so more than likely won't go to a bowl. Wildcats, all they need now is a win over in-state rival KU this Saturday night. Sunflower Showdown at 7 o'clock under the lights to clinch their spot in the Big 12 championship game against TCU. Chris Kleiman on a high-scoring game and a key play.
You never know. Honestly, you don't think it's going to be 17-16 or 48-31. You play what's dealt, and then you handle it from there. And with that explosive offense, yeah, they can put points on you. And I think we have an explosive offense with the guys that we have. And so then it came down to being able to make some plays. And I thought Julius Brents' interception was huge, and then we were able to score off of that drive. And proud of the guys on that effort.
So while K-State was winning down in Morgantown, KU is laying a big fat egg in Lawrence.
Ewers with the snap, turns, hands to Robinson. Bijan trying to follow a block, now cuts it outside. Robinson back inside, 25-20. Oh, my goodness, forget it. Touchdown. Bijan Robinson, a 32-yard touchdown run. His fourth touchdown of the ball game.
Bijan Robinson, big day. He ran for 243, a career high, the four touchdowns. Texas led 38-0 at halftime. Never looked back. Jalen Daniels back at quarterback for the first time. Looked rusty. His stats, 17-26 for 230. A lot of that in blowout time. And here's Lance Leipold on the blowout loss. And I will say this. This is the first time we've seen KU just absolutely get run. And it can happen. I mean, we've seen Oklahoma State run. We've seen teams run. This year, some really good teams, even in the top 10, that have got run. And KU, in the past, what's happened is they get run every week. So there's still progress, but no doubt still got run out of the building by Texas. Here's Coach Leipold.
We're out executing all three phases. That's disappointing considering I thought we had a good week of preparation. They out executed us. They out physicaled us. It's disappointing. And that comes back to me. So it starts with me, ends with me. And so I've got to find a way to do a better job.
KU 6-5, 3-5 in the Big 12. Texas approves a 7-4, 5-3 in the Big 12. And listen, we're going to talk more about KU K-State later this week. Actually, we'll do it tomorrow, Wednesday, because we won't be here Thursday and Friday, which is good. KU K-State Saturday night in Manhattan. You know, early at the beginning of the year, I would have said K-State's going to win fairly easily. Then when KU was playing really well, I thought, man, that could be a heck of a game. Adrian Martinez versus Jalen Daniels. And now what I see to me, and I said it last week, and I think you guys agree, there's two big differences. Really, there's one big difference between the two teams. And that is that K-State's defense is, I think, significantly better than KU's. Having said that, K-State's defense got torched in Morgantown the first half. So if the K-State defense plays like they're capable of, I don't see KU winning this game Saturday night. But if the K-State defense shows up like they did in the first half in Morgantown, then yeah, KU's got a shot.
I agree with that. It seems like when they lose a secondary player that's important, they just don't know how to play for a half.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like Julius Brents got kicked out of that game against Texas, and just they laid an egg that half after he left, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, no Kobe Savage right now, and he's been huge for that secondary. And I think that was a huge part of West Virginia getting a big start throwing the football.
I think
some making guys were out of position and didn't know where they needed to be, and you rely on guys that are so good like Brents and Savage to put you where you need to be, even if they're at – if you're not in the same spot that you're supposed to be, they're going to kind of direct you to, and they're going to help pick up your slack, right? Yeah. And I think that's been an issue in both of those games where K-State had really bad halves.
Right.
They went to the locker room, figured it out. I think both teams were kind of tired in the second half, to be completely honest with you.
They're chasing everybody.
41-25 at halftime. I'm like, good game. Oh, wait, it's just halftime?
Yeah.
If they play the right way defensively, I'm not overly concerned about it. And usually when K-State has good teams that are focused teams, they play real well against Kansas.
That was the easiest wager ever. You had the over. If you had the over on West Virginia K-State, you won that in the first quarter.
Another good tweet I saw. Bob Huggins had no answer for Michael Beasley. Yes.
That's right. That was how much offense he scored, no doubt. Of course, if K-State beats KU on Saturday night, they will go to the Big 12 title game in Arlington, and that would be against TCU, a team that they led and then had all those injuries in Fort Worth. And I'm watching this TCU game against Baylor, and here's how it ended.
Third down, another run. DeMarcado.
Gonna get on the field.
Yeah, he got a hustle here. Wow. A run, and now it's a total scramble. Emergency mode for the unbeaten Horned Frogs. Hypnotoad in a hurry. Griffin Kell for the win. TCU is undefeated still.
Wow.
Unreal.
I was one of the most remarkable endings to a game I have ever seen in my 46 years on Earth. I'm watching this game. I watched the whole second half, and my oldest says, TCU, they're losing today. And I say, and then they missed the extra point, which in college is a 19-yard kick. There's no excuse to miss an extra point unless the weather's bad. And he missed that extra point. It changed everything. So I said, dude, it's going to come down to two-point conversion. Sure as heck. TCU goes down. They score about 3 minutes left, just under three. They go for two, and the running back takes a one-handed attempt to catch what was a catchable pass. But and right away, my son's like, oh, my God, you got to catch that. I said, you know, in fairness, he shouldn't have to be in that position if his kicker can make a dang 19-yard kick.
Yeah.
So then TCU, he kicks it away. They have their timeouts. And Blake Shapen, they had a perfect play call on third down, Baylor did. And Blake Shapen rolled out, and he had a wide-open tight end for a first down that would have probably won the game. And for some reason, he decided, I'm going to run it, and he played it super conservative. He didn't get the first down. So Baylor punts. And then TCU gets a couple nice gains in the passing game. They ran it once. And on, what was it? It was second down. They gained three on a run. Second down, they spiked it. And I'm like, with 22 seconds, I'm like, dear Lord, why are you spiking the ball here? Because now, if you're in play and you get stopped, it's fourth down. You can't spike it again. I still don't know why they spiked it on second down, because they could have made this frantic ending was awesome for television and ratings and all, but they could have made this so much simpler to me. Okay, you wanted the ball in the middle of the field, is what they said afterwards, for the kicker. So what you need to do on second down is you go ahead and you run
it.
You run it to the middle, then you spike it, or let the clock wind down and set a field goal, or spike it, and then you probably have about 13 seconds where you can take a shot or two of the end zone or throw it out of bounds. Instead, they did the opposite, and they ran the field goal team on. But, you know, my oldest son made a really good point, I thought, and a lot of people, I bet, weren't thinking it this way. He goes, Dad, by doing that, the kicker had less time to dwell on it, think about it. He just went out there and kicked it, and he had just missed an extra point. I said, you know, I don't know if that's part of the equation the coaches are thinking. I doubt it, but I think you're right. Like, think about it. When you have all day to shoot a free throw in a critical situation, and somebody calls a timeout and they ice you, instead of just going up there in the regular mode of play, it's different, right?
Yeah.
It's the same way for a field goal kicker. It's no different. And I think there was something to that. But what really cracked me up about this was, and, by the way, the call by Jason Benetti was absolutely A+. That was a tremendous call to the ending of a game on something you can't practice as an announcer.
No.
And he's basically saying, what the bleep are they doing? So they come out there, and they snap it with 3 seconds. And everybody's calm, cool, and collected. And they make the field goal, and Baylor fans are just stunned. If a picture was worth $1 million, oh, my dear Lord. That was the greatest camera work as well. They shot the Baylor fans just absolutely like, what just happened? And they're showing TCU fans going, can you believe this? We're undefeated still, and we pulled this out of the fire down 8 with 6 minutes to go on the road in Waco. And Sonny Dykes after the game... Did you see the interview? Sonny Dykes after the game, the first-year head coach at TCU. And here's a little nugget for you. Texas, when they had their opening, when they forced Tom Herman out, the boosters wanted Sarkisian. The athletic director at Texas, you know who his number one guy was that he wanted? Sonny Dykes.
Sonny.
And the boosters said, no, we want Steve Sarkisian. Well, look how that's going so far. I mean, Texas is doing okay, but TCU beat him anyway.
Right.
So they're 11-0 in Sonny Dykes' first year. So after the game, they interview him, and they said, what about that last... How did you guys do that? That was such a frantic finish. Were you concerned? Were you worried? You know what he said? No. He goes, it looked a lot more frantic than it really was. He said, we practiced this every Thursday all year long.
Yeah.
He wasn't surprised. He had all the confidence in the world that his guys were going to do the right thing. But to me, you made it a little bit dicier than you needed to based on spiking it on second down. Yeah. And the other thing is, Brock Huard made a very good point. He said, listen, all it takes is one twitch by your lineman, and the game's over because you have no timeouts. They take the time off the clock. It's over. Or all it takes is one of those 11 guys that's on the field goal unit to not have his helmet on ready to go, okay? Or all it takes is the center gets scared and he gets antsy and he snaps it before the holder's ready. Or the holder panics, like, oh my God, 3, or no, 5. Come on. You know, he panics and they snap the ball and then they have a bad hold and the kicker's not ready. They were all very controlled and poised. The other thing that goes wrong in that situation is there can be confusion. The offense, if one of those offensive guys stays on the field and doesn't get off, you have 12 men on the field. There's so many things that could go wrong with it. But Sonny Dykes said after the game, we do this all the time. We do it every Thursday. There was no fear. There was no panic. It was a lot worse than it looked like than what we thought it was. And I thought, you know, that's why you practice. The TCU Horned Frogs are 11-0 because of attention to detail. All these people across the country that don't do any research can sit here and tell me, well, Alabama would kill them, Tennessee would kill them, Michigan would kill them. You know what? Maybe they would. But here's the thing. They've won every close game. The great teams win close games. They win these games, and they were prepared, and they pay attention to detail. And the margin between winning a game and losing, and I'm showing it to Dusty and Jason right here between my index finger and my thumb, is less than a millimeter. That is a difference between winning and losing. And all it takes is one kid on that team to not do the right thing, and they end up blowing it. And you know what happens? Everybody yells at the coach. The coach is an idiot. Why did he spike it on that play? Why'd they run it then and take a chance on it? And he won't throw the kids under the bus. He'll say, I made the mistake. We should have never done it. But he's wrong. They had practiced it, and they easily could do it, and they did it. And it is pretty amazing how they pulled off that
win. I have a rules question here. So the clock is running, and TCU is running their field goal unit out on there. Right. So they're substituting.
Yeah, it doesn't apply on the field goal.
Doesn't apply on the field goal.
Doesn't apply on the field goal. Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
there are people that were saying that, and they were wrong. They threw it all out there because they think they're
rules
people. When
you go to special, like, there's subs.
Everybody subs no matter what.
The defense has to sub if you go into punt formation.
Right. Everybody has to.
And the guys are going to try to block that field goal are different guys.
Right.
They should be anyway. But, you know, it's...
You're subbing no matter what on both sides.
That's the biggest difference there.
Yep.
Because I thought that for just a second, I'm like...
Like, Baylor could have lollygagged a guy out there.
If that were the rule.
Yeah.
You're right. If it was a regular play during a regular game, defense offense, like K-State's done the teams and cost them a 5-yard penalty because of it. But no, they can't do it on the special teams play. So, yeah.
Yeah. I just, in my mind, I'm like, it's a bold strategy when we have been talking all the last 3 weeks that you cannot lose a game and still make the playoff.
That's right. Like, which they should
you
be.
You have to be good. And they should. But TCU understands, I would think, we got to win every game to make the playoffs. And to have a situation where the clock could run out before you even get this snap off.
Can you imagine if they would have flinched and had a penalty and the game's over? Or can you imagine if the kicker missed it? Or can you imagine if they botched the hold or the snap? Or don't even get the kick off. They don't even get it snapped. Right. Can you imagine? It was going through my head when they were running out there. I'm like, oh, dear Lord. Their playoff chances, they're risking it by doing this. It was insane.
Yeah. That's all that was going through my head. It's like, this is bold when you
it's a bold
have
strategy,
to win
Cotton.
This game. Like, that was you're going to trust the holster, but again,
it's crazy.
You feel confident in who you've got and what they're doing and what you've done. Listen, you can practice that also, by the way, all the times
it's
in the world.
During a game,
but when you get there on Saturday and you have another defense or a special teams block unit looking at you on the other side and all the things that could go wrong in that situation where your season's not on the line when you're practicing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it is now.
And you got to make the kick.
Yeah.
You just have to look every Saturday on Twitter. There's a hashtag that says college kickers, and there's just all highlights of kickers people missing. Kicking it all over the place. and it's not an exact science in college as it is in the pros. So yeah, it's a good fun finish, but oh boy, that had been nerve wracking if you're a Horned Frog fan.
No doubt. Yeah. They are now 11-0. Oklahoma won the Bedlam matchup. They beat number 22 Oklahoma State 28-13. Oklahoma's now bowl eligible. Who thought we'd be talking about that in week 11? Texas Tech won 14-10 at Iowa State. So here's what TCU has to do to make the playoff, it appears. They have to win, I believe they're at home against Iowa State. And Iowa State can't score points. And then, although I still think it's a dangerous game, the emotional high of how they won. Uh-huh. And then they get a rematch against K-State. And I still think K-State's going to win the rematch and spoil everything for the Big 12 and TCU. Uh-huh. I still believe that. I think K-State's going to be your Big 12 champion.
If they go ahead and take care of business this weekend, I agree with that.
Yeah, and I think they will. That's why I say that.
Yeah.
But if Will Howard gets hurt, that changes everything too.
Yeah.
Because then you go to Jake Rubley or Jaron Lewis, and what happens? We know injuries can change everything. Nebraska, we'll spend about 30 seconds on this. Nebraska led most of the game, but somehow finds a way to lose, wait for it, a one-possession contest. In this case, 1 point. 15-14 to Wisconsin, who's not that good, as Graham Mertz there from the Kansas City area with a game-winning touchdown.
Malusi, the deep back in the eye.
Oh!
Keeper not in the end zone, though. No signal yet. Wisconsin thinks they scored.
That's definitely a
touchdown. And it's a touchdown. Finally, the signal.
Nebraska 1-13 in one possession games over the past two seasons. Huskers were up 14-3 at halftime. Couldn't score in the second half. Interim head coach Mickey Joseph dejected, as you can imagine, after the game.
This is a tough one. You know, to be in control of the game like that, I got to do a better job of getting them to close people out. And that's going to happen with maturity. And let them take the head off to these kids. A good character group. Group that's not going to quit, and we're going to come back next week, and we're going to play hard again and look for a different result. Just didn't happen today. This one hurts.
Nebraska's 3-8. They will be at Iowa coming up on Friday. Believe it or not, if Iowa wins, they're in the Big Ten championship game, and they can't score points. That should be a great Big Ten title game, no doubt. Nebraska 2-6 in the Big Ten. By the way, their opening season loss to Northwestern. Remember that over in London? Mm-hmm. Or Dublin? Dublin. Mm-hmm. I want to say Dublin.
Dublin.
Dublin, Ireland. You know Northwestern hasn't won a game since. They're 1-10.
Yep.
Yeah, congrats. Yeah,
we get to say it every week.
Yeah, we do. So it could be Iowa in the Big Ten title game against the winner of Michigan and Ohio State that comes up this weekend. And one more thing, I saw some Nebraska fan put out there and said, no fan base has had to go through torture like this. And I said, dear God, you need to get out a little bit more. First of all, were you a K-State fan before Bill Snyder arrived in Manhattan? And no, there weren't one loss. There wasn't like all these one loss or 1 point losses, one possession losses. They were just so bad that the game was over before it even started. Before Bill Snyder got to Manhattan. So don't give me this, you know, lots of people out there going, hey, Nebraska fan, hold my beer. Woe is you. Oh, wow. Have you ever been through a season of 0-12? Ask KU fans about that. Okay? Yeah, yeah, don't sit here and you're not going to get any sympathy by saying, this is no fan base has ever had to go through this. You guys have lost your sense.
Take the championship banners and wipe your damn tears.
Right,
and move on.
That's right. Yeah. That is exactly right. Thank you very much.
My friend just went from, like, totally normal to all of a sudden he's now on the Urban Meyer train.
Oh, dear God. And they're desperate.
And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? You hated that idea like probably 8 hours ago. You hated that idea. And he goes, I'm just tired of being the worst team in college football. I'm like, oh,
you're not the worst team in college football.
My God. It's just a bad stretch. Like, be a Purdue fan. Like, you know, the Purdue fans deserve something. I don't know this idea that Nebraska fans deserve a good team. I just
By the way, can we stop with the sellout streak crap? I mean, dear God, did you see how empty it was?
Yeah,
that's embarrassing. And I know sellouts are based on just the tickets sold.
Yeah.
But technically, a company could buy 80,000 tickets in the sellout, and then you have two people there. Right. That's so whatever. That was horrible. And you know, I don't blame people. It was cold. I wouldn't have been out there either.
Oh.
I don't care. My team's great. I'm still not going to cold because I'm a wimp when it comes to cold. I'm old. I don't want it.
Yeah. I'm not going there for a 15-14 game.
I'm not going to watch Wisconsin-Nebraska and Nebraska's backup quarterbacks.
To see if Wisconsin gets bowl eligible.
Like, yeah, man. That's the thing. Wisconsin's at Nebraska's number, and Wisconsin finally wasn't very good, and Nebraska still couldn't beat them at home. USC over UCLA was a very entertaining game, 48-45. There's 1,200 yards of offense. USC now is in good position. If they can beat Notre Dame and win the Pac-12 title game, they will more than likely be in the playoff. Georgia beat Kentucky, wasn't super great, 16-6. Ohio State had the rally and win over Maryland, 43-30. Michigan, you know, everybody tells me Michigan's schedule is so tough compared to TCU's. Actually, TCU's way tougher than Michigan. And I can just hear it this week today. Paul Feinbaum and all the other stooges that are out there, they get paid a lot of money to say stuff that doesn't make any sense. You know, really impressed with Michigan rallying to win that game against Illinois at home. TCU is just the luckiest team on earth, the way they were able to win on the road in Waco.
I almost called that Illinois game.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Michigan was at home, and they needed a couple of calls from the officials, too, by the way. Tennessee got rolled by South Carolina. Tennessee will crush TCU. They can't even beat South Carolina. 63 points. Spencer Rattler looked like the Heisman hopeful he was early with Oklahoma. He had 6 touchdown passes. Tennessee's quarterback torn ACL, out for the season. You talk about a quick thud to an unbelievable year for Tennessee.
I'll say this about these teams and these fan bases. I used to say, just stop whining. Just like, don't whine in October and November and stuff like that. Don't whine about where you're at. Just win your games, and then if you get left out, then you can whine about it. But because, you know, we saw Tennessee do this. We almost saw Michigan do this this week. Yeah,
quit whining about it. Just go win.
Just
go
win your games. Then if you get left out at the end, then you have something to whine about.
But, I hear you.
Yeah.
Oregon beat Utah 20-17. That's why we have rankings, for people just to argue.
That's why
we have them.
And I like
it. It don't mean anything right now. The top 25 rankings don't mean nothing, but they keep coming out every week. People want to argue about it.
I say stop whining, but if they did stop whining, then I'd probably hate it. I'd be like, now I'm bored.
Yeah, now people don't care.
Yeah.
Oregon beat Utah, number 12 over number 10, 20-17. North Carolina, they were a fraud all along. They lost to Georgia Tech. They had a 17-0 lead and blew it, 21-17. Arkansas beat number 14, Ole Miss. But remember, Ole Miss is really awesome. K-State won, of course. Notre Dame shut out Boston College. Notre Dame-USC, huge game this weekend. And Central Florida attempted one pass and didn't complete it and still won over 20th-ranked Central Florida. The Navy running the ball, man. Running the ball. And what else we got here? It looks like that's it for the ranked teams. So you look at the top 25. Let's just look at the top 5 or whatever. So obviously Georgia's 1. Ohio State's 2. Michigan's 3. And then TCU's 4.
Yeah.
But now, right now, USC's 5.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
USC was the big winner this weekend. Huge winner. Tennessee's the big loser. Alabama's helped out a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Okay? Even though they still have the same record, but lost to Tennessee head-to-head, but somehow people are going to say Alabama's automatically ahead of Tennessee now. But whatever. So Alabama's still got an outside chance to get in this playoff.
Helps LSU.
It helps LSU. Although, honestly, LSU need... it does help LSU because they lost head-to-head to Tennessee. Although, technically, they, too, would have the same amount of losses. Right. But LSU would have an extra win by winning SEC title game. So I think LSU would be in over Tennessee. So it's a win for LSU, too. But there's also another team they got to keep an eye on when it comes to this, and people are kind of overlooking him, and that's Clemson. Clemson has just one loss. They blew out Miami, held them to like 100 yards of offense. Miami's not great. Clemson, if they win the ACC, right now they jumped Alabama in the actual polls, which I don't know if that's an indicator of things to come for the playoff. So let me ask you this. Let's assume Georgia wins out, all right? So that takes care of LSU. We simplify it. So Georgia wins out, they're in. Ohio State, Michigan winner, goes ahead and beats Iowa, whoever in the Big Ten title game, they're in, right?
Yeah.
TCU goes undefeated, they're in, all right? Who's in the fourth spot? Is it Clemson or is it USC if they both go win out the rest of the way? Is it USC?
I would say USC.
I would say just USC because they're going to have a couple more good wins coming.
Yeah.
Okay, now what happens if USC trips up? Is Clemson, should they be ahead of Alabama?
Absolutely.
Because that'll be the next argument.
But you could also make that argument about the Ohio State-Michigan loser,
well,
too.
That's the next equation. Yep. Would you put the Michigan-Ohio State loser in over a USC, which I doubt because they'd have another good win against Notre Dame, another good win in a Pac-12 title game. But would you put Michigan or Ohio State ahead of Clemson?
I think I might. I don't know. I'd have to take a deeper look at it. But
Clemson have an extra win, ACC championship, extra data point. That would be an argument.
Yeah.
Personally,
I don't love that.
Alabama shouldn't be in the equation with two losses.
No, I don't buy into the you have to win a conference championship to be in the playoff, especially if the team that beat you is already in the playoff because they're a conference champion.
Right.
I would, based on what, and I haven't watched as much college football this year as I have in the past, but I, based on what I see, the product, things that I've seen, I would put whoever loses that Michigan-Ohio State game ahead of Clemson right now as a better team.
I think I would too.
I don't think the committee will do that.
No.
Okay.
If Clemson wins because of their brand
and being
an ACC champion, and that team that we're talking about losing and not even making it to the championship game, I think that name that Clemson has is going to put them in the fourth spot.
I agree. If it was Wake Forest, I don't think
so.
Right. Yeah. Now, let me ask you one more question on this. Let's say TCU beats Iowa State. They lose to K-State in a close game. So TCU is sitting there with one loss. Assume USC wins out. Okay. Well, actually, we could do a different equation. Let's just say USC doesn't win out. They got Notre Dame and the Pac-12 team, so they're eliminated. Clemson wins out. TCU's 12-1. Ohio State, Michigan, you got the loser. And then the winner's in, and Georgia's in. Who are you leaving out? You leaving TCU out?
The committee will.
Yeah, and I think that's a bunch of hogwash.
Okay, I'm not saying I would, but the committee will.
And you go undefeated and lose your last game. Georgia can do it. Alabama can do it. SEC teams can do it. But if TCU does it, if Oklahoma did it, they'd be in. We saw it even back in 2003. They were still
in. When there's only two teams,
they're still in. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's exactly what happens. But if it's OU Texas, it wouldn't even be considered.
Right. Like getting back to Clemson, just to say hypothetically, all your conference champions were undefeated. Georgia, Ohio State, USC.
Well, USC's not undefeated.
Well, just a hypothetical situation.
Okay.
And you put Clemson back in and undefeated too, but you somehow, some way.
All five conferences,
you would leave the ACC out, right?
No.
Because they're the easiest, I would think.
No, I totally disagree with you. If they're all five are undefeated and Clemson's your ACC champion, as they are now. So you're saying Georgia's undefeated.
Yep.
Let's say Ohio State's undefeated.
Yep.
Okay. USC's undefeated.
Yep.
Okay. TCU's undefeated. Clemson's undefeated.
Yep. TCU
ain't going in.
Ah.
They're not in. You know why? Brand,
yeah.
That's why. It's because of Clemson, not because the ACC is better than the Big 12. It's because if it's OU, they're in over Clemson, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe USC. But there is no way TCU's in over Clemson.
I would argue that the Big 12 is the third best conference right now. I would argue that you should put their champion ahead of the ACC and the Pac-12.
But we both don't think that would happen.
But that wouldn't happen. You know how much the ESPN would salivate over Georgia, Ohio State or Michigan, USC in L.A.
And Clemson.
And Clemson, the brand.
Georgia, Clemson, the semis.
All them brands that are in there, and then the television sets that you're getting from the West Coast. Like, nobody else, they don't watch...
But Dallas-Fort Worth is a gigantic market.
I know. But they're not going to think about that. They're the coast. You know, that's what they're going to think about.
Yeah.
And so, TCU would absolutely be left out in that scenario. They shouldn't be. Again, what I'm saying is they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But they would be. And in all these scenarios, they would be.
We've talked about this before in the show. And that's why this playoff's a joke. Because you have to be able to have five spots for five conference champions. And you have four spots. So what we've talked about before in the show, Jason, I totally get where you're coming from. We've talked about it before. If we've actually given the same scenario, except what if K-State's undefeated, is what we did.
Yeah.
And we'd all know the answer.
Right.
K-State wouldn't be in.
Yeah.
Unless there's a Wake Forest that wins the ACC, then maybe you're in.
Yeah. It's
about brands.
Depends on the name and the brand. And listen, you can't tell me that ESPN's not in the ear of some of the committee members.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
So that's what is also a part of the problem.
And money drives the animal that we have, no doubt. Okay, MIAA, Pittsburgh State and Northwest Missouri State won easily against teams that probably shouldn't have been in the playoff. in Division II. They have a bad format, and MIAA teams like Emporia State and Washburn get punished when they have good years, and then you only take two out of this conference, whatever. It's messed up. It's unfortunate. KU men nearly lost at home to Southern Utah on Friday night. You talk about a trap game or a letdown game. KU was only up one with about a minute and a half to go. They held on. Grady Dick, a big three-pointer. He had 18. Jalen Wilson, career high, 33. Bill Self back on the bench for the battle for Atlantis in the Bahamas. It starts this Wednesday morning. 11 o'clock pregame on Z96.3 Lake. K-State men are 3-0. They're back on the court tonight in the first of three games at the Cayman Islands Classic. I saw Marquise Noel and other players on the jet skis in the ocean, and I was very, very jealous. Wildcats are facing 1-2 Rhode Island. Opening game tonight. Tip-off at 6:30. Wichita State men back on the court. They're 2-1. They face 3-1 Grand Canyon in the first game of the Hall of Fame Classic at 2 o'clock this afternoon in KC. K-State women led by as many as 26 and then held on yesterday to win their third game in 4 days. They beat Utah Tech 91-82. Gabby Gregory, red hot with 6 threes, led the way with 26 points. What addition she's been to K-State. The women are 5-0 and should be ranked when the new rankings come out before they head to the Virgin Islands. Kansas women are 3-0. They won over UT Rio Grande Valley and Lawrence by 30. I saw K-State beat Rio Grande Valley in Manhattan on Friday. Rio Grande Valley in that game against K-State on Friday night, women's game, they were 0 for 14 in the second quarter, 0 for 8 from the field in the second quarter, shot 11% in the first half. They could not buy a bucket. They hit like 7-3 second half, but it didn't matter. In case they went up to win pretty easily by 25. KU wins by 30. Okay, NBA. Last night, the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors won their first road game of the year. They were 0-8 on the road. How is that possible with the talent that they have? They finally won a road game, 127-120 over the Rockets. The 0-8 road start to the year, the 0-8 road record to start the year was the second worst mark in Warrior history. Klay Thompson, washed up, no good anymore. Last night was vintage Klay Thompson. 10 three-pointers, 41 points. Steph Curry, 33 points, 7 threes. Andrew Wiggins, 6 three-pointers as the Warriors lit it up. Splash Brothers combined for 17 threes, 74 points, and they barely beat the Rockets. Despite all that, they still don't play defense. And World Cup begins today. I'm looking forward to those draws and, hey, we can get a tie and move on to the next round and all these crazy equations.
I believe we can tie.
I believe that we can tie. I believe that we can tie. Woo-hoo! Oh, no, we tied. Oh, no, we're eliminated. How? We didn't even lose the game. We didn't lose the match. United States men's national team will play their first game at a men's FIFA World Cup for the first time in 3,065 days when they battle Wales today. It's Group B play, and the Americans are back in the biggest competition in the world after failing to qualify in 2018. They'll battle a Welsh team that made it to the Cup through the playoff route. 1 o'clock today on Fox. USA, USA. How un-American are you two? I'm doing USA. No, you're doing USA. These people are from another country. What are you cheering for? Wales? You got money on Wales?
No, I don't.
Are you Welshish?
Welshish.
Is there such a term? Welshish? Oh, that's Highland. Welshish. Welshish? No? USA. USA.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't have there be any goals in the game. I don't know if I'll watch. Actually, I know I won't watch. But the World Cup is today in Qatar. No, Qatar. That's how it's pronounced. Qatar.
I want to say Qatar.
I do, too. I think Qatar sounds better.
It does.
Qatar.
You were reading those, like, all of where those places that all these college basketball teams are going over the weekend.
Makes you mad, doesn't it?
I hate my friends Travis and Sherry this week because they are season ticket holders to Creighton, and they thought Creighton's going to Hawaii for one of those, and they're like, well, you know what? This is a nice excuse for us to go to Hawaii, so they're... Yeah, you know, they're not my friends this week. Either.
Travis and Sherry.
Yes.
It is duly noted. Jason is no longer your friend.
We'll pick it up next week, but...
Yeah. You know. The friendship is on hold.
Yeah.
Because you're so selfish and went where it's warm and didn't take Jason
with
you.
Yeah, they didn't ask me to go.
That's really wrong.
Yeah, it is.
What kind of friends are
they
those?
They left the kids at home, too, so...
I would look pretty bad if they took you and left the kids at home.
Yeah,
kids would then hate you forever.
Okay. Yeah.
That's not good.
The oldest daughter is upset.
I bet. How old is she?
She's a freshman in high school.
Oh, yeah. I'd be upset, too.
Yeah.
My 8-year-old, who's now 9, was all ticked off that I went to Wisconsin without him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been cool, bringing him along. Yeah. So I could have shoved him in the luggage.
She's hardcore basketball, too. So she would have enjoyed the game part of it as well. But, it's upsetting. They didn't ask me to go.
It's too bad. Real friends.
I know.
Let real friends go with them to Hawaii.
They didn't offer to pay for me to go either, so...
Well, first I got to invite you. Then it's up to you to come up with the funds. Oh. I'm going to stop somewhere there on this dream scenario that you have.
Yeah. I lost the sympathy on that last one, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah. You did. Yeah. You went just a step too far, Jason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's what they thought. Yeah, maybe that's what they thought, that if they invited you, then you would say, so are you picking up the tab? And they're we're not inviting Broadfoot, because the next thing you know, you'll want us to buy all his food and snacks and whatever else, you know?
Like, you're going to book your kids to go, but then you're going to decide they can't be out of school that long, right? 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 And then they would just go to waste.
Oh, Travis and Sherry, you unbelievably horrible people.
I know. Selfish.
I've never heard of worse people than that. No doubt.
I hope they have fun.
Yep. Me too. As we suffer through the cold of north central Kansas. Have a great day, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.